it was really difficult, and it was very lonely, and I really needed someone to talk to who were not medical staff.
When Mark was 8 years old, he was diagnosed with a rare condition, aplastic anemia. After a bone marrow transplant, he spent 5 months in strict isolation. Complications over the next 7 months meant he had only 2 weeks at school, and for 6 months after that could only attend half-time.
I think I lost a lot in that time, in those months when I couldn't speak to any of my friends, and I really wish I'd gotten more of a chance to.
A few years later, Mark's mum Gina met Megan, whose son Darcy was enduring a similar experience.
In the first 6 months, you're really focusing on just trying to get the child well. When it starts to go on, you start to think about those longer-term issues, including education, but also making the day more positive for the child, which includes connection and learning. And as that time went on, it became more and more apparent that Darcy needed that connection, and that's when Gina and I started to talk about this and try to make it different.
While there are doctors talking about the need to keep kids involved in education even when they're on treatment, and there are researchers in education looking at the short-term and long-term effects and the barriers to keeping kids involved in education, there's no parent voice there, and we needed a unified parent voice because we're the ones who are on the ground, and our kids are the ones who are, as my son would say, at the pointy end of the cannula, and we needed those people to have a voice in the conversation.
The isolation children suffer when they're out of school can have profound effects. Here's Megan again.
He was in protective isolation, and when we talk about protective isolation for children, it means in a room on their own, and that was for 8 or 9 months for Darcy. So he had very little contact with the outside world, and so that compounded it.
Yeah. How did that affect him?
Depression, anxiety, longing to be with friends, longing to be a part of the community that is yours, that is your school. Obviously, on top of all that, the children are dealing with their very acute and serious medical issues and the painful part of that.
Mm.
So the connection is important in light of that as well, because it's a way to give a focus of positive future. And that's really what this is about for us. Yes, the education is important, but the social connection for the children and giving them that message every day when they're being so resilient that there is a future for them and it's a good future, and that's what learning provides.
Gina says that while her son Mark, who's now 13, hasn't suffered academically, he struggled socially. It's been hard for him to cope with the rough and tumble of playground behaviour and settling into classes.
In a hospital environment, the kids are given as much control as you can possibly give them. It's the way they cope with the things which are being done to them. And so Mark, of course, is used to doctors and specialists coming to him and saying, "Now, Mark, this is what we think is wrong, and this is how we think we're going to address it. And we'd like to try this. Now, what do you think about that? How would you like to do this? How would you like to set it up?" And you don't get a lot of that in high school.
You don't get that from teachers.
No, you don't. No, it doesn't work that way. So, and even just a sense of re-engaging with the work. You know, Mark has spent a lot of time doing things which are really hard and really scary, and he knows that getting the maths assignment in next Tuesday isn't a matter of life or death, you know. So,
whereas what he's been through was.
It was. Yes. So trying to, just trying to get that engagement going again has been an issue, and the research will show, has shown, does show, that kids who maintain contact with their classrooms, with their schools while they're away, don't have the same problems with school reintegration, with engagement, with motivation when they get back there full time.
Kathy's son also missed extended periods of school. Christopher was hospitalised when he was due to start kindy, and then again a few years later.
I had a child that was ready for school, and I didn't know what to do with him. Plus, he'd lost social side of life. And then the second time round, I was probably a bit more clued up in that I did a bit of homeschooling stuff with him, just working on very basic things because I felt he'd probably actually regressed educationally, and I wanted him to have some sense of self-esteem when he returned to school, and that was my responsibility.
I guess I had just assumed that if a kid was out of school, then you just do what you can to catch up when the kid comes back, and I was very grateful for the support that we had received when my child went back to school. But at that stage, I thought, no, this is a special education issue. These are kids who are falling through the cracks. They don't have access to education. There's no academic continuity, there's no connection with their friends, and we need to try to deal with that.
Gina, Kathy and Megan have banded together to form a not-for-profit group called Missing School. It's about keeping seriously sick kids connected.
Our first thought was that we wanted to collect all the information we had, because we were pulling up a lot of research studies, we were pulling up a lot of support programs. But it was one of these things where everybody knew a bit and it wasn't all in one place, so we thought we'd pull it all together. But as we talked about it, we realised the whole thing was about community, because you've got these kids who are taken out of their community and you've got the parents who also need the community of support, because the parents need other parents to talk to and the educators need other educators to talk to work out how to deal with all these different problems.
And siblings too.
And siblings too, thank you. Yes, siblings are often overlooked and they're often left out, and our children all have siblings who have struggled in their own ways, so the siblings also need that connection. So we would really like the website to be a place where people can come together to share ideas, maybe meet up with other people in similar situations, in similar geographic areas, and make connections that will make us all stronger.
The Missing School mums are also keen to encourage research and to lobby government for more support to keep their children connected and educated. While full of praise for the efforts of particular individuals, they say there's a need for a more coherent strategy.
Without the institutional framework and proper recognition within the departments of education, it comes down to and relies upon the goodwill and good intentions of individuals. And I think each of us have come across a number of those.
Absolutely.
And at Darcy's school, there was one teacher in particular, two actually, who really made an enormous effort on his behalf.
What did they do?
School lunchtime walks with children who had been checked, you know, to make sure that they weren't infectious. And so walking with Darcy at lunchtimes and things like that. And then later when he went back to school, there was a lot of support, but it's that time when he was out of school that was difficult. So I guess what I'm saying there is that efforts were made, but there wasn't any clear guideline from an educational department point of view to those schools and teachers as a framework against which they could apply procedures, processes, funding and resources to support the children.
It's a story we hear over and over again. There are schools and teachers which are doing fantastic work, and there are schools and teachers who simply disappear when the kid is sick. It's if the child's not actually in the classroom, then it's really easy to overlook them. And teachers
it's
are really
really malice. Just
not through malice. It just tends to be the way it is. Schools are really busy environments. Teachers are really busy people.
And they're focused on the children in front of them in the classroom.
That's right. But you've got these kids who are in hospital for weeks or months, and who then also, because of medical advances, might be not actually on the ward, but might be recovering at home for weeks or months. And there's no framework there to support them, to support their education in any way.
The mothers of children who've missed school because of serious illness believe new ways of connecting, such as Skype, could and should be used to keep their kids in touch with their classmates and teachers. Even watching lessons from their bedroom could make them feel more included. They acknowledge issues such as privacy and cost, but believe they could be overcome if the will was there.
One thing that would have made it a lot easier would have just been able to have maintained regular contact with my friends and back to the schools, because I really didn't get that much involvement.
This is Mark again. For 18 months, his schooling was severely disrupted by his illness.
I remember at one point we arranged that my dad's laptop would be carried around the school, and so that I could actually have a face-to-face conversation using Skype to talk to some of my friends in the class. And that was a really good thing to do in that time, in that five months when I was at home, when I couldn't be seeing people. And I would have liked to have had a chance to talk to my friends, because I would have just felt less lonely.
As adults, we have an obligation to children. That's an obvious statement to make. But in illness in particular, children don't benefit from the ongoing social contact that adults have, because children rely on adults to make that happen, their parents or their teachers, to make that contact happen with the unwell child.
These kids have fought so hard for their lives. And that's really what it comes down to. It's now our responsibility to give them a life that's worth living.